But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire.
Morning and welcome to Playing with Fire, Long Island's only food, wine, and lifestyle show. I'm your host, Tom Shortell, and I'm here with co-host, dear friend and producer, Stu Schrager. Good morning, Stu.
Good morning, Tom. How art thou?
Thou wast freezing. You know, it's cold out there.
It's the time of year.
I know. I can't get used to it, man. I'm just such a summer, spring, summer, fall guy. And winter, you know, if we could go from, you know, like November 1st to April 1st, I'd be happy. You know?
Well, the reality is we're quite spoiled because the past couple of years there's been very little snowfall, for sure. And one never knows what is forthcoming.
Well, it's, you know, the snow thing is, it's kind of the first time you see it, you know, for the year. It's always pretty and, you know, especially when it's at night, you know, you have that look, you know, with the street lights and stuff like that. But then 2 days later, it's all black on the side of the road. It's a mess, you know. Anyway, enough of that. I have an announcement. Drum roll. All right. You keep some time, boy. Yeah, so I'm taking over a restaurant out in Southold.
Really?
Yeah, I'm taking over as kind of a, you know, maybe that's the wrong term, but the genesis of this is my partner Adam, who, you know, we've been together a long time, probably 20 years. I know I'm longer than that, but we've been partners for 20 years at Amano and Lure. And he did this restaurant with a gentleman, Francois Payard, who was a famous pastry chef in the city, and he did this place called Southold Social in Southold. And they opened up this nice little restaurant, you know, it was going along real well. And whatever happened, he and Francois parted ways. So, Francois's out of the picture, and he asked me to come in and help him redo the restaurant and relaunch it. So I said yes, and that's the story. So I'm going to have another restaurant in the portfolio here.
So now are you going to keep the same name?
Yeah. I'm just redoing all the inside of menus and stuff and things like that.
Decor, is that going to stay the same?
Pretty much. It was beautiful. It's a beautiful place. It was originally called Cassi, and it was owned by, the landlord owns it, obviously, but it was run by a man named Marco Pellegrino, who's the chef owner of Osteria Umbra.
I've heard that name here on Playing with Fire.
Great restaurant. I mean, just, and Marco's a great chef. He's a very talented guy. And so he had this place, Cassi, for, I guess, a couple of years. He had come over from Umbria to do the restaurant. He relocated to the U.S. And he had a great restaurant there. I don't know what happened. Sometimes these things have, you know, a lifespan, and due to landlord troubles or, you know, disagreements or whatever. I don't know what the story is. But anyway, after 2 or 3 years, he left there, and now he opened Osteria Umbra. And so the place was vacant, and my partner took it, and they decided to make this restaurant. So anyway.
So what is the name of this restaurant?
Southold Social. So I'm going to go in there and do my thing, and hopefully we'll have a nice little, you know, place for people to go in Southold. And
so when will this place be Tom Shordelled?
Right after the new year, I think he's gonna close for a week, and then we'll like reopen under the new regime, as you say, you know.
Educate our listeners on geography. So right now you have two restaurants out east.
Yes. I have Amano in Matatuck on Main Road. And then I have Allure, which is in the Port of Egypt's marina out there, which is between Southold and Greenport. I think the address is Southold, but it's right between the two towns on the south side of the street, right on the bay. And then Southold Social is, if you go through the town of Southold, it's probably another quarter of a mile on the north side of the road. And it's a beautiful restaurant. It has two floors, upstairs and downstairs. And it's got a garden out back, which is kind of cool. And we also have room out there for catered events, tented events like weddings and stuff like that. So I'm excited about it. I think it's, you know, I haven't done a restaurant in a while. And I swore I'd never do it again. And apparently I'm an addict.
So again, what is the food classification? Is it just Americana?
Yeah, it's contemporary American. You know, when I looked at the menus, and I don't know, you know, I got a big mouth, and I probably shouldn't say this, but when I looked at the menus, they were kind of, to me, boring a little bit. You know, stuff we'd all seen before a thousand times, and it was all good. It was all good, don't get me wrong. But it just, I don't know, when I heard that, you know, when I think of the name Southall Social, when that social part, to me, conjures up images of shared plates and going in and, you know, you, me, and the girls are going in. Let's have, all right, get one of those. We'll share, you know, back and forth. That's the kind of thing that I think the place should be. And, yeah, I've been wrong before, you know, hundreds of times. But that's my vision for it, and that's kind of where we're going with it.
So, again, the menu is probably going to evolve a little bit, but if you were to, again, describe contemporary American to somebody and they said, give me a beef, give me a chicken, give me a seafood or fish dish, what might those be?
You know, well, let me think. I mean, you know, a beef dish we're going to do on there is a soy marinated sirloin with 8-hour tomatoes and roasted Yukon Gold. So it's kind of like it's more of a Japanese marinade, you know, with an Italian sort of tomato-y thing. And then for a chicken dish, we'll probably do something along the lines of a roasted chicken breast, marinated roasted chicken breast. We usually kind of marinate them in buttermilk for a while and sort of soften them up. And then sear them on and serve them over like a parsnip puree. Or this time of year would be, you know, maybe butternut squash puree with chanterelles and like a pan gravy. And then, you know, what was that? It was on seafood and steak.
Seafood or fish?
Yeah, fish dish. You know, we're gonna do like a roasted local monkfish with mussels and romesco, you know. So just things that, you know, that aren't every day, you know, like the salmon, and, you know, everybody has salmon, including me, you know. And I'm kind of trying to get away from it because, you know, salmon's probably the most requested fish dish out there on Long Island. And, you know, the nearest salmon comes from, you know, 1,000 miles away. So
in the day, wasn't scrod a trendy fish?
Yeah, back in the 60s, you know. And scrod is just baby cod, you know. Now it's, you know, scrod to me is one of those things that, you know, I think diners used to do it because it was inexpensive and you could sell it for, you know, $20 or whatever they were selling it for back then. But I'm kind of excited, more excited about the smaller plates and the sharing possibilities of, you know, the menu that we're working on right now. And that to me is, you know, the fun of going, you know, going out should be fun. It should be, you know, I think a lot of times, you know, when the restaurant models that we had all through those years, you know, you're kind of obligated to give a protein, a starch, and a vegetable. Everybody had that protocol, you know. And I think we're all moving away from that. It doesn't, you know, everything doesn't have to have a potato and a vegetable. It could stand on its own. And I think if you have enough things on there and you can bounce around, I don't know about you, Stu, but I would much rather have 3 or 4 small plates of interesting things than one, you know, salmon with potatoes and vegetables. You know, I just kind of get bored with it after a while.
No, that's so funny you say that. My modus operandi is just what you said. I love to share. It's funny. There's some dining experiences that you do, in quotes, family style, or sharing,
right?
As compared to, you know, everybody do their own thing. So just recently I had an occasion to go dining with another couple. First time we've ever dined with them. And my buddy's a little bit germophobic.
Oh, no.
So, like, I know that. I mean, I've seen him in
it's
operation.
Like dealing with Larry David, you know.
So, you know, we went to Cafe Testarossa, which is in, I guess, Syosset.
Syosset, yeah. Billy's a great chef, by the way.
Yes, yes. Love that restaurant.
Yeah.
So, it was funny. So we had drinks, And then he brought up, should we get a couple of appetizers and share?
Uh-huh.
And like, I'm like panicking because...
You're not going to get any of his.
Yeah, I didn't know, you know, how to handle the situation.
Yeah.
But it all worked out. Mm-hmm. It just was incredible. And I just have to share one dish that I had that I've never experienced. It was grilled octopus,
mm-hmm.
but it was plated on... either a broccoli rabe or spinach, something mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah.
But it was in a marinara broth.
Mm-hmm.
It just was incredible to me.
Yeah, it's good.
Just unbelievable.
Yeah, Bill Billy's good, man. He's a good chef. He's been there a long time, too. He's got to be there for 40 years, I would think, you know?
And not an easy restaurant to get a reservation at.
No. Listen, he does a good job, and, you know, people respond to that, thank God, you know? But, yeah, it's kind of, you know... I fell in love with this industry in 1968, and I've never cheated on it. I've never fallen out of love with it. It's always been, I think it's in my DNA. But, you know, for the last couple of years, I was kind of like, I don't know, man, if I want to do this again, you know, because it's, you know, opening restaurants is like pushing a boulder up a mountain. It's just, it's difficult, and I don't think people really know quite how hard it is, especially rookies who get into this thing who have no idea what they're doing, you know, and... You know, it's very hard for experienced people to do it. And, you know, you watch people who have no experience who have done either, you know, a successful business in their life or they have come into some money somehow and they're going to open up a restaurant. It's painful to watch them sometimes. But it's getting me again. The bug is getting me again. And, I think that as difficult as it is, I think there are ways around it, and hopefully I'm right. And if I'm wrong, you know, you'll know about it soon enough. But, you know, I think that we can, you know, make this thing work and have a successful operation out there, especially with the catering angle, because that's the last bastion of, you know, profitability in the restaurant business. You know, the good thing about catering is you know who's coming, you know how many, and you know what they're going to eat. So it takes a lot of the guesswork out of it. You know, I've always said that, you know, when you have a restaurant, let's say Saturday night you got 200 reservations and you got, let's say, for argument's sake, 10 things on the menu. Well, how much of each thing do you need? I don't know, you know, because you don't know who's coming and you don't know what they're going to eat. So it's a big guessing game. And the funny part is if you guess wrong, you know, if you run out of stuff, people get mad. If you have too much stuff, you know, it goes to waste. And if you hit it on the head, everybody goes, isn't that what you're supposed
to do?
That's
so interesting that you say that because, again, everybody thinks that everybody's business is simple.
Oh, yeah.
And I always say about the restaurant business, you want to have enough that you don't disappoint when somebody orders a special.
Mm. Yeah.
But at the same time, you don't want to overdo it. I know you've explained over the years that, you know, you can take too much filet mignon and convert it into something else.
Sure.
But still, you know, the objective of all this is to make money.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, so if you're stuck with inventory, you know, not the best situation. So, again, I think it's, you know, it's an interesting recipe, the restaurant business, to be able to accomplish what you need to accomplish.
Yeah, the problem, too, with guys like myself and, you know, I'm certainly not alone in this. There's a lot of people out there who... you know, fairly successful in the restaurant business. But I think that the profit motive has to be secondary. And, you know, every business teacher in the world, professor, would, you know, smack me over the head with something really hard for saying that. But it's true. I think that, you know, your first obligation, if you're going to be in the restaurant business, is to build a killer spot. You can figure out the economics later, man. But if you got the wrong location, if you got the wrong look, if you got the wrong menu, if you got the wrong... You know, I have a friend who has a place. I won't mention who it is because that may be another announcement I'm making soon.
Woo!
But anyway, he's got this place in Nassau County, and it's...
Now we're talking.
Yeah. It's a beautiful place, and but he kind of misread the community. And he's too high priced for where he is. And he's an experienced guy, you know. It's just one of those things he miscalculated, and people didn't respond. They went there. Everything's great. Food's great, you know. Atmosphere is killer. He spared no expense. But it's a little too, much. He's choking out the neighborhood.
I got to ask, is it a Mediterranean restaurant?
Might be. I don't know. I'm not going to say.
There you go. Well, I hope that we get the opportunity to converge with the radio show and the new restaurant and maybe have a listener night there as part of your grand opening.
Yeah, that'd be fun to do. A little remote broadcast or something, you know?
Yeah, and then again, I have to believe you're not going to be there 24/7.
No.
Which is an art in itself because I know that so many times, including my father in the day, would wander into Jewel and say, "Is Tom here tonight?"
Yeah, you know.
So that's, again, an interesting recipe in the sense that you know, you can create these properties and, again, you know, share your availability, but not be chained to them because, again, you know, there's a lot more to life than work, although work allows us to play.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, the thing with that is, how do I explain this? Well, you know, you got all these celebrity, quote-unquote, celebrity chefs all over the country opening places and, you know, Wolfgang Puck has, you know, 50 things going on. You know, he can't be in all of them, obviously, you know. But the thing is, you know, if you can, like I've gone from quarterback to head coach, you know. So I'm not in the game all the time, but I'm running the game. You know, I'm kind of like showing him what to do. And it's a much more comfortable position. And believe it or not, I enjoy being on the line. I really like it. That to me is like game day, man. That's, you know, Sunday in football season. It's not practice anymore. Especially Saturday night, you know, when you're really banging. It's kind of fun. At the end of the day, the busier the better, because at the end of the day, you feel so good about what you accomplished or so bad about what you destroyed. Because, you know, I'll tell you a quick funny story. When we opened up Allure, you know, the first Saturday we were open, we did like 750 covers. And it was all day. You know, it was from 11:30 to 10 o'clock at night, whatever it was. And, you know, so I was battered after that. We were like just, oh, my God, you know. And I was talking to a friend of mine, Chef Michael Meehan, who's a dear friend and talent, great, really talented chef. And he says, you know, how'd it go? I said, 750. He drops the phone. He goes, are you kidding me? I said, no, I'm not kidding. So he goes, you learn anything? I said, yeah, I learned we do 300 really well. You know, it was one of those things where after 300, you're on your own, dude. It was just such a mess, you know. So you realize, and I was talking about this with somebody last night, when I open a restaurant, and I learned this the hard way, and I learned it quick. But when people open restaurants, they're usually kind of strapped for cash. They start replenishing, you know, because you have all this outlay of money and, you know, effort and all that. So you want to start getting it in. So the thing is, when a new restaurant opens, you have this honeymoon period where everybody wants to come and check it out, right? The discipline it takes to control that is paramount, A, and B, hard to do because the temptation is to grab as many reservations as you can and get as much money back in the kitty so you get the cash flow going again. But I warn you that it's not a good idea. You know, the best thing to do is, you know, when I open Coolfish, a day this, because Syosset is such a great area for restaurants, you know, the day the sign went up on Jericho Turnpike, I had to put two people on the phone to handle reservations. And they started taking them like, you know, they were supposed to take them. And I'm like, no, I don't want any more than 40 people this night, 50 people on the weekend. And then when we get 50 down, we'll go to 60 and 70 or whatever. And it worked out great because what happens is you get a lot of people in there. You know, it overwhelms the kitchen. You piss everybody off, you know, and you're making enemies right from day one. You're better off just, you know, having a little restraint and just making sure that, you know, you can handle 40 or 50 people before you start taking in 200 reservations and killing your kitchen or dining room or whatever.
I love the decor over at Coolfish in the day. If I'm not mistaken, there sort of was a partition wall down the center. So it was like almost two rooms, but it was an open partition.
Yeah.
But it was, and then you had a wonderful bar area. So it was, which many a time had been a performance area for Tom Shawdell and his band.
Yeah, I did. I did a couple of gigs there. I got a couple coming up too. I got January 6th. I think I'm playing at Hidden Harbor. You know, to me, it's fun. I mean, the music thing. Obviously, I'm in the twilight of a mediocre musical career here, but you know, it's kind of fun to be able to go out and play when you want to go out and play. You know, as I've been doing this since I'm 11. And that was more than 10 years ago. So it's been, you know, a fun ride. And I get to play, I've been lucky enough to play with such great players, you know. At the moment, I'm playing with Mike Dorio a lot, who's a phenomenal guitar player. I mean, crazy good. You know, and the other guys in my band, Brian LeClerc and Bosco Mickney and Andy Allidort, and all these guys that are just fabulous. And I actually got to play with Steve Vai a couple of times, which is, you know, the scariest place in the world to be is standing next to him with a guitar in your hand, because he's the ultimate warrior, as they say. But yeah, it's been a great ride. You know, restaurant wise, music wise, I've led a charmed life that way. So chapter 47, whatever the hell number it is now, is going to begin after the first of the year, and we'd be honored to have everybody come out and say hello. And when you're on the North Fork, stop in and you know, let me know that you're there, and I'll come out and have a glass of wine or a chat with you.
All is good. So I wanted to share. Believe it or not, I listen to radio, and I'm listening to our stations, and there was an ad for Smoking Al's, who happens to be the sponsor of Playing with Fire. But he included in the ad one of his appetizers, which is the poo-poo platter. Which brought
is that P-U-P-U or P-O-O-P-O-O? I'm a little... it better not be an H on the internet.
On the internet, it's P-U-P-U. But a poo-poo platter in the day was an appetizer assortment at the Chinese restaurant.
Yeah.
You know, it had Gamois. Ribs and it had...
Egg rolls and stuff.
Yeah. So, but Smoking Al has a different twist on it. And his... is burnt
ends?
Yeah, barbecue shrimp, pork belly, ends, and a haystack of onions.
sounds like fun.
Yeah, a great way to start your meal. So Al keeps coming up with these different treats, and we appreciate him being a sponsor of Playing with Fire.
You know, the interesting part about Al is the antithesis of just what I was talking about. He's a guy who came into the restaurant business from the garment industry, I think it was, and had no experience and pulled it off. And God bless him. I mean, it's, you know, most people don't understand it. That's just short of a miracle. It's, you know, it's not quite a miracle, but it's right there, you know. Very hard to do, and he pulled it off. And, you know, I think it's the strength of his product. I mean, Al is, you know, he's on it all the time. He's down here. He works the room. He, you know, he makes sure everything's what it's supposed to be. I think his son works with him, too, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
And they together, they do a great job. I mean, I've had dinner there and enjoyed it immensely.
Very cool. So here we are. It's for... A lack of a better description, the middle of December.
Mm-hmm.
So we're like halfway through the holiday season. We got Christmas in 2 weeks, and then in 3 weeks we have New Year's Eve. What would be a seasonal Long Island-centric meal? I mean, I when I think of winter sometimes, I think... I'm not going to say it right. Cassoulet?
Cassoulet, yeah. Good for you. You got it in first
shot. So, you know, but that's a French dish.
Yeah, French in origin, for sure. You know.
So what would be, a Long Island-centric December winter entree?
I'd have to go with duck, you know. And Crescent Farms is coming back. They have 12,000 ducks now. You know, they shut down for a couple of years because they had that disease out there. But they're on their way back. I just saw a clip on News 12 about Mr. Corwin, who's the owner. He was saying that, you know, he's got a generation again of ducks, which is great, you know, because his duck is the best I've ever had.
So I have to ask you, I love duck.
Mm-hmm.
Duck a la Range. Is a treat. I know with Jewel you had duck breast or something.
Yeah, I like to serve the breast for two reasons. One is the problem with half ducks is that, you know, everybody, you know, they think they have to order it crispy to get the fat out of there, and I don't know, it just never, it's fine, but it's not for me. And I think that the breast is the easiest to serve and the easiest to eat.
So I have to admit, I'm glad there's a desk between us.
Mm-hmm.
But I, in the day, had duck breasted at Jewel.
Mm-hmm.
I found it a little too gamey.
You didn't like it? Well, it's the same duck that's on the half duck, you know? It's the other half. So I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, duck has a certain flavor. It's supposed to taste like duck. It's not supposed to taste like chicken. And, you know, I know my daughter hates it, and my daughter likes everything. I mean, you know, she doesn't like duck for some reason.
You know? So you were just saying that, you know, when I have duck, I'm the guy that if we're having fowl, I like a crisp skin, and uh-huh. that's part of the enjoyment of sure. the meal. So with duck, do you, like you were saying, do you drain the fat and then try to crisp in the skin as much as you can? And how do you do that without overdoing it?
Well, if you're talking just the breast, what I do is I trim a lot of the fat off. I leave a layer on, you know, because fat is flavor. You want some flavor there. I leave a layer on, but not enough to really become an issue. You know, because what happens is if you just sear a duck breast and you cook it, you know, you'll have that white layer of fat in between. That's the part everybody hates, right? So why leave it there? Just trim it off. I trim it off, and I usually I cure them for a couple of days with fresh thyme and marjoram on the skin and let them sit in the walking box and dry out a little bit. Concentrates the flavor. If you're going to have, or if you're going to roast a duck, a whole duck, you got to pierce the skin with like a skewer, and that allows a lot of that fat to run out, so you'll drain it that way. But here's another technique, and you know, you're probably not going to do this at home because it's a major pain in the ass and it takes a lot of time. But I used to do these lacquered ducks. And what we used to do is we used to hang the ducks in the refrigerator for like 24 to 48 hours. And it dries the skin out, right? And then I would boil the ducks in honeyed water. I would take a lot of honey and put it in the water, sweeten up the water. And what happens is the ducks are so dry, they absorb that water really quickly. And then we would take them out, we would drain them, dry them out again, and then put them in like a 500 or 600 degree oven. And the skin would become lacquered and black, almost like if you saw like a way a black car shines when it's simonized. That's what the duck looked like.
Oh, wow.
It was beautiful. It's gorgeous, you know. And inside it's, you know, it's medium to medium rare, whatever. But what happened was I was making these ducks, and people were sending them back. My duck's burnt. It's not burnt. It's lacquered, you know. Don't tell me it's not burnt. It's black, you know.
No, to me, that would be perfect.
Yeah, but it's not that, you know. It's just the color. It's not, you know, anyway. So, you know, it's like, I don't know, this, there's a certain segment of diners that kind of sort of take the artistry out of you, you know. All they want is like, you know, Caesar salad with grilled chicken, or, you know, they can't eat this, they can't eat that, they can't eat the other thing. And it's like, okay, I get it. You have issues, fine. But, you know, this is a restaurant. I'm trying to do art here. You know what I mean? If it's not for you, you know, there's a couple of places in the city that have disclaimers now on the menu where, you know, if you have certain allergies, maybe this isn't the place for you. And you know, it's not really being lousy about it. It's just true. It's like, you know, it's hard to... You know, especially these menus where they have tasting menus, they have, you know, 7-8 courses. They're doing a lot of work back there. It's hard to just drop what you're doing and, all right, I got to substitute this course for him and that course for him. And he can't eat tomatoes, and that guy can't. It drives you nuts. So they do the thing in advance, and they have on the menu where if you have a dairy intolerance or gluten issues, this, that, and the other thing, we can't really accommodate that. And it, I think it avoids a lot of pain for both parties. It avoids embarrassment for the customer. It avoids all the extra work and the, you know, the mental fatigue on the kitchen. It's probably a good idea.
Gotcha. So, in line with talking about duck and the crisp skin, I was at the Garden City Hotel for a holiday party the other night, and
I love that place.
It's really, really cool. I've never eaten at the Salt restaurant.
Yeah, that's David Burke.
But so this was in the room that was right adjacent to that. Interesting party model that there was like an open bar, obviously, when you walk in, and then there was some fruit and cheese, but there was no past hors d'oeuvres.
Mm.
So they pretty much get right into the buffet dinner. And they had a carving station, and it was ham and turkey. The turkey really wasn't carved. It was more shredded, which wasn't bad to me. And when I went to get my serving, there was like a pile of shredded turkey and skin and whatever. And they, I asked for that.
We left over from Thanksgiving.
I don't know. But, and then it was married with like a country rice.
Uh-huh.
It must have been, you know, like, it was a browned rice with, it must have been mushrooms and stuff.
Uh-huh.
But it was just paired together perfectly for me.
Yeah.
So having, I didn't have a lot of turkey for Thanksgiving. I'm the fool that was running around from family to family.
Oh, no.
And trying to not overeat. So I really didn't enjoy my turkey.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
This was this was my chance. But I, again, just like you said, the Garden City Hotel does it right. I mean, they can do a small party. They can do a large party.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's a great venue. It really is. Great venue. And those two restaurants, you know, now Salt and the other one, it's right in the front. I don't remember the name of it. But it's such a cool hang, too. I mean, I used to love to go, when I was in the area more, I used to love to go there and just hang at that bar in the lobby there, that one that's right off the lobby to the right.
Well, the epitome of Christmas in the day was the Garden City Hotel. I forget the family that owned it at the time.
Oh, well, I know.
But
Nelkin.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they threw a party for the community. And it was all sorts of terrines. Is that the right way of saying it? Which is like jellied.
Yeah, well, it's aspic on the outside. But it's like liverwurst. It's, you know,
yeah.
It's a force meat. You know,
or chopped liver, which is one of your favorites.
My favorite, yeah.
But it was just an incredible, incredible. Their big catering room is sort of made of like three or four different rooms. There's a center area. Off of that is the main dining area. Then they have a smaller area. And then was so...
Do they still have the nightclub there?
Good question. I don't think so.
I haven't heard anything about it. You know, their brunch is still, you know, the benchmark of brunches on Long Island, if not all New York. It's killer.
So I'm not going there, but I'm going to Rotman's.
Rotman's, same thing.
For my mom's birthday.
Oh, yeah.
My mom, today, the show is being aired.
Yeah, yeah.
And talk about buffets. Again, the two mirror each other, Garden City and this.
Yeah.
But a raw bar that's half lobster, shrimp, clams, oysters, and Mignonette. See, I almost got it.
I'd kill him, I swear to God.
I said it fast, so you wouldn't have caught it.
Yeah.
Mignonette.
Yeah.
Then there's an omelet station. There's, I believe, French toast and maybe pancakes and maybe waffles.
Yeah.
A sushi bar. I'll be honest, the sushi. There's so many other things, you know.
Sure.
Why go to sushi?
Yeah.
If you're into, you know, salmon, they have, I believe it's like three different types of salmon. Gravlax, like a Nova, and something else. And then there's like a poached whitefish, which is the size of Long Island.
It's pretty big.
And then they have the pastries section. And what they do is they lay everything out along the perimeter of the bar area.
Yeah.
So they actually place stuff on the bar.
Yeah.
It's $65 and it includes one drink. It's $65 and it includes one drink, I believe. But it's wonderful.
Yeah, and they're busy too, man. Like I said, I'm in that area. I think it may be $69 now, but $59.95 three course dinner. You know, charges. They have cool stuff on there. You can eat some supplemental charges. They have cool stuff on there. You can eat some supplemental charges on some of the things. But the menu.
Another one of those restaurants. I didn't expect to talk about this, but I was in another one of those restaurants. I was at Hendrick's Tavern the other night.
Okay.
So it was a political dinner.
Uh-huh.
But here's the choice of entrees: an 8-ounce filet mignon.
Right.
Braised short rib, grilled branzino, a filet, chicken palm, or rigatoni alla nonna.
Alla nonna.
So,
Who's nonna is it alla?
So, first of all, trying to figure it out, because there were a number of good things there. I like filet mignon, but usually if I'm doing steak and I'm sharing with Kerry, that's what we get. So I have that a lot. But so the braised short ribs was I was thinking about, but it was an expensive political fundraiser.
Right.
So I'm trying to figure out, like, which is the best value, you know? You know, like
the filet, get my money's
like
worth
the filet mignon was like $55, you know.
Yeah,
pretty
yeah.
sure it might have been like 42 or something.
Yeah, sure.
But I couldn't figure it out. And then somebody at my table got the rigatoni alla Nona, which was good, but that had to be $20.
Whose Nona was it, alla? That's what I want to know.
It must have been Gillis's.
Gillis's Nona. She's Greek.
Oh.
Am I allowed to say that?
Yeah. That's pretty funny. Cause,
I'll be bumped.
But at any rate, I ended up going with the filet because Hendrix is a steak restaurant, but it's not a steak restaurant.
Yeah.
And again, chicken palm, it's good. But I don't go that way.
Yeah, you can get that anywhere. It's
pizza but
place.
And again, there are assortment of foods. Like, it's an appetizer, but they passed it as a past hors d'oeuvre.
Right.
Is their truffle pizza, which is like a white pizza.
Yeah.
They were serving regular pizza. There was a salmon or a tuna tartare. Again, I just couldn't figure out what to get. You know, Branzino. Is good. I just couldn't figure it out.
Yeah.
But I did.
Branzino, I've had it 1,000 times. I like it in Greek restaurants. I don't know. What's his name? Who's that guy, that comedian that roasted the all the actors at the Oscars that time? The English guy.
I forget.
Oh, I can't think of his name. He was the original Office guy in England. Anyway, he did this speech where he roasted all these actors and actresses. He was the MC of the Oscars, and it was a big controversy, whatever. But anyway, he said, you know, he had a really funny point. He was saying this thing. I guess he was doing a routine. He goes, you know, we conquered the dinosaurs. World War One. You know, we beat the Nazis. You know, we freed the world. It's words we're afraid of now. It's so true. It's like, what happened? How did we become so soft, you know? Anyway, I lost my train of thought going in that direction, but...
So it's funny, we're talking about food. How unusual to talk about food on Playing
Ricky
with Fire.
Ricky Gervais.
Oh, yes, Ricky. Yeah. He was a pretty funny comedian.
Very funny.
My band of undistinguished gentlemen had a wild game night again. Unfortunately, I was traveling and was not able to participate. But, you know, when you go to a wedding or whatever, like what comes to mind is
in
Franklin Square, the sandcastle.
Yeah.
They put like this boat out of which is their raw bar.
Yeah.
And oh, my goodness, they tortured me by sending me a picture of the raw bar with shrimp and oysters and clams and crab claws. Unbelievable.
Yeah, my friend's son got married there.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, Roger's son.
Well, I know you know the chef there, Rodrigo.
Yeah, yeah.
But he does an incredible thing.
No, wait, you're talking about I was talking about the sandcastle.
I'm confusing everybody.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
The sandcastle has who you said. My boys had their dinner over at the mansion in Glen Cove.
Right, yeah.
And Rodrigo's there.
Good man, Rodrigo.
And, you know, it was... A good night. They combine a cigar night with this raw game. But, again, can't be everywhere.
No. So just going off topic a little bit, I got to tell you a quick funny story. When I'm sure it happens to everybody else. When you write a book, there's a couple of things that you you experience. And, you know, I had a friend who was a very successful novelist, and he never really warned me about this so much. But... the two things that happen is, first of all, when you write a book and you know, it's really exciting times, it comes out, you read it, you know, you're looking at it, you're admiring it, and then once you sell it to all your friends and family, now you have to get rid of the other 25,000 that are in your garage, right? So you got to kind of, you know, couple of marketing plan, this, that, and the other thing. The second thing that happens is, after a while, all these people who are in the book pushing business call you. I literally get called probably twice a day. And it's the same speech. They read it off this boilerplate thing. Hi, Mr. Shodell. Our book search experts came across your book Second Helping, and it's fabulous. And you know, we want to bring it to a wider audience, and we can pitch it to, you know, HarperCollins and all these other big publishing companies, and we have inroads to Hollywood where they take these scripts and they make movies out of them. The whole speech, right? So the first time you hear it, you listen. The second time you hear it, you kind of listen. The third time you hear it, to me, the only time I answer them is when I'm in the car and I have more than like a half an hour to screw around with them, right? So it's funny. So the last time I had this woman call me up and she's telling me that, you know, we're going to make a movie out of your book, the whole thing. And I said, listen, the only way I will sign this contract is if I can star in a movie. Right? And she goes, what? I said, no, I want to be like Sylvester Stallone. You remember Sylvester Stallone when he wrote Rocky? He kind of held out and he said, I'm not going to give you this script unless I act in the movie. And look what it did for him. So I want to be like Sylvester Stallone and I want to act in a movie. Now she's, you know, I'm sure she's looking at me like I'm out of my mind, you know? So anyway, it turns out I finally got a call after literally hundreds of these things by some woman in LA who's an actual, agent, a literary agent. And I've had brushes with literary agents over the years. And I never really hired one because I was selling a bunch of books on my own. You know, I have the radio show. I have, you know, the wineries I can put the books in. I have a couple of restaurants. I have the website, you know, so I was selling, you know, I was selling 7,000-8,000 books, you know, which was, I thought was pretty good. Anyway, so it turns out that the other thing that cued me about her is she actually read the book. Because I've had people say, oh, your book is fabulous. You know, did you read it? Yeah. Okay, well, tell me about the story about the that, you know, they give you that. You know, they haven't read it, you know. But she actually read it. She was telling me about a couple of stories. And she says, you know, I think this has potential. So I'm going to give this a go this time, you know. It's not a lot of money that they're asking for, but it's enough to make you, you know, think. But I'm going to give this a go, and I want to see if I can get this to sort of a national audience, because my audience is basically national. It's Suffolk, you know. It's a small part of Long Island, which is a small part of the U.S. So if I can get it out there a little bit, maybe it would be worth it.
That would be pretty cool.
We'll see what happens.
Pretty,
you know?
Cool. Yeah. So it's funny you talk about books and author. Over the weekend, I'm listening to a show on satellite, and it's Nelson DeMille's son.
Yeah, Alex.
And so, you know, they were talking about, I guess, The Tin Man was his last book that Nelson was writing, but he didn't complete it before his death. And his son finished it. And I guess they collaborated on some different
they
books.
Did, yeah.
But, you know, that's got to be difficult to complete.
Yeah, to pick up the gauntlet there, yeah.
Yeah, because it's, you know, I was looking at it in the view of cooking also, but, you know, a chef gets a recipe, and we've talked about this before, you know, he might want to enhance it, this, that, and the other, but there seems to be a basis for that entree at a restaurant, and yourself, when you're, again, involved in different properties, you want to give somebody the flexibility of being creative, but at the same time, you want to curtail him,
you know,
changing.
Keep him in the lane, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, here's the thing about that. When I learned early on that if you're going to do multiple restaurants, you have to get the mindset where that you're going to lose 10%. I'm just using a number. It could be 20, 15, whatever. But you're going to lose a certain percentage of the product. And I don't mean lose it like it goes in the garbage of stealing. I mean just losing the quality of what you would do. Only because it's a different person, right? And it doesn't mean it's better or worse, whatever. But you're not going to have it the same. If you're okay with that, and if you tell yourself, listen, it can be 10% less than what I want it to be and still compete on the market with everybody else out there, then you're okay. If you're not, like a guy like Charlie Trotter, right? He had this Charlie Trotter restaurant in Chicago, which was brilliant. And he said, I'm going to spend my life on the line every night of my life in my restaurant. And he wouldn't open up a second one. And he did eventually open up a satellite thing in Vegas that lasted maybe, I don't know, 7-8 months, and he just shut it down. But there are guys like John George, you know, Von Gerichten, who's a brilliant chef, who has 43 properties all over the world. I mean, obviously can't be there in every place. But when you look at his menus, they're all kind of pretty much similar. You know, especially, you know, his he was schooled in like Asian kind of flavors. I think he worked in Singapore or Hong Kong for a while. So he's got that kind of thing going with his food. And then, he's done a couple of things, Mexican, whatever. But there's a lot of similarity running through his menus, which is fine. I mean, it's what he does, you know. So, but I think that you have to be able to, you have to be able to suffer a 10% loss in the dish or the restaurant itself or whatever if you're not there and still be okay with it. And if you can do that, you can, you know, have multiple restaurants and retain your sanity, what's left of your sanity after multiple restaurants. Or, you know, if you can't, then you got to stay in your place and just watch your food. And I know, you know, my friend Billy Holden was like that. You know, he had West End Cafe and, you know, he didn't want to expand. He just stuck it out and he made a tremendous success out of that restaurant by being there. His presence was important, you know.
So now I need to inquire about your knowledge of a former restaurant of yours, which I guess is the second chapter in what it was. So Jewel was your restaurant,
right,
with the sushi restaurant.
Beiju,
yeah, within the restaurant. then Scotto family bought the restaurant from you. I forget what it was called when they took it over.
Beiju. They went from Beiju to Beiju.
So I am dining there Saturday night, last night as it will be.
That's quite a trick.
But I'm going to the Halston, which is the new name.
Yes.
And what do you know about the Halston? What can you tutor me in so I know what to expect and to possibly order?
Well, Beiju was supposed to be like this Asian-inspired restaurant, and I guess that didn't work out so well. So I've never been there at Halston. I haven't been in the building since I left, and for no other reason other than I just haven't gone. It's not like I'm mad at Tony or anything. The only thing I really know about the Halston is Fonzie, who was one of my bartenders, is still there. That's pretty much my knowledge of Halston, other than the fact that I think it's kind of an American restaurant.
They describe it as a modern American kitchen and bar.
Okay. That tells me they have modern American food. Whatever that means.
So they go on to say it's an energetic atmosphere, diverse menu, and upscale yet approachable dining experience featuring everything from sushi and burgers to steak and seafood, and options for business lunches, family dinners, and weekend brunch, plus a lively bar scene, which I think is more with DJs, which is more, I believe, Thursday nights, but I'm hoping it's not too early on Saturday night.
Yeah, you know, the DJ thing to me is it's term insurance, man. It's just my partner was trying to get me to do that, and I fought him tooth and nail on it. And, you know, yes, you can make a bunch of money real quick, but boy, does it come with its share of issues. And, you know, there's the drinking thing, there's the drug thing, there's the fighting thing. You know, it's just you need security. It's there's always something going on. You know, alcohol is a strange beast. I mean, if you can dole it out in, you know, in doses. And the great part about restaurants is generally people aren't pounding, you know, cocktails. You know, the bar scene, you know, every once in a while you get somebody who has too much to drink or whatever and is an issue. But it's not like the nightclubs. Nightclubs, everybody's out, everybody's fired up. You know, you get this. The drug thing is a reality. You know, there's a lot of stuff
A lot of testosterone around.
Tremendous amount of testosterone. Everybody's trying to get, you know, get with somebody. It's just, you know, I've seen some really bad scenes.
So I want to dissect this menu. Again, we're not being critical of the Scotto restaurants.
Not at all.
So one of the first appetizer is a tomato soup. Mm-hmm. Accompanied by a half-grilled cheese sandwich.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you something. I get requests for grilled cheese and tomato soup past hors d'oeuvres all the time, right? So we make grilled cheese and tomato soup. People eat the grilled cheese, they don't take the soup, ever, ever. It's
Well, usually it's a big waste of shooter. So wait,
yeah, it's a shooter,
that,
but nobody drinks it.
So that be said, the radio station did an event the other night with John Tesh, and it included light.
Oh, was he? He was married to somebody famous,
Connie Selica.
Connie Selica, that's right.
Yeah. So they had light by share where the rest where the performance hall was, but they had sliders. I swear to you, the burger was the size of a quarter. The roll was like a lollipop, a pancake. So, and later on that evening, I found out that the chicken slider was a much, which was a ground chicken, but it was bigger. A much better deal because.
Well, you know, you don't want to chew through like 6 inches of bun to get to the.
That's what my problem was. So I ended up eating like meatballs. You know, like I was just.
I hope you didn't pay a lot for this.
But then what got worse was they used like club bread, meaning like small squares of
rye, club rye, whatever.
It was a white bread, but they made grilled cheese, but it was like crackers.
Yeah.
It was too well done. I mean, there's got to be a happy medium on a. On a grilled cheese sandwich.
There's some things that don't travel well, you know? There's some things that don't travel well takeout. There's some things that don't work well with past apps. Grilled cheese, to me, has to be eaten immediately right now, and it's got to be hot, and it's got to be thick. There's got to be a lot of cheese in it, you know? That's not going to happen when you're trying to, you know, grill. You know, they're not doing that to order. So they probably have it on a sheet pan, and, you know, they make 70 or 80 at a time. And then it sits, you pass 10, and it sits, you warm it up again, you pass 10, and warm it up again, it gets dry. You know?
Yeah. So this appetizer list from the Halston is interesting to me. Bacon and burrata. Does that pair well?
I don't know. I never had it.
So
let me know.
They're saying heirloom cherry tomatoes, balsamic glaze, toast points.
Mm-hmm.
Clams Casino, traditional, breadcrumbs, bacon, roasted red peppers. Cracklin' rock shrimp, zucchini, scallion, spicy mango, aioli. This one I'm not sure about because I think I'm at Outback. Onion ring tower.
Oh, boy. Well, that's probably just onion rings piled on top of each other.
Yeah. New Zealand lamb chops. That's interesting. Lollipop chicken. Octopus. Steakhouse sliders. Shrimp, fried shrimp basket, spinach and artichoke, and then hummus.
Hmm.
That's the appetizer list. Interesting.
Okay. Yeah. Listen, I mean, you know, Tony Scotto's a very good operator. I think he's known more for steakhouses than anything else. I'm praying he does well there. You know, I'm a big fan of his, and I
hope. Well, it's been around for a while, more than a year.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is the yin and yang of life. This would be pretty funny for you, because on the salads, they have two extremes. I'll give you the easy one first. Steakhouse wedge.
Oh, boy.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Then the chop salad.
Oh, my God. He surrendered. Yeah, the chops, you know, that started on Long Island, and it's a Long Island thing. You get out of Long Island, and nobody knows what a chop is. You go to Iowa and try and order a chop salad. They look at you like you're an alien, you know, which you are, really. Yeah, it's I don't know where it all went, not wrong, but all went off the rails. I mean, I was saying this to somebody the other day, one of the bartenders over at the club. I said, you know, I started this business in 1968, and so I've seen a lot of different iterations of fads and things that have come through the restaurant business. I'm almost in it almost 60 years, so you see an awful lot, you observe an awful lot. And nobody ever did this stuff 30 years ago, you know? You walked into a restaurant, you found something that you could eat, you liked, you ordered it, you ate it, and you went home. Somewhere around, I guess it was maybe the late 80s, early 90s, this turned into a blood sport. Where it's like, I can't eat this, that makes me sick, this makes me fart, I can't get nervous, I can't have a pepper, I can't, damn, I mean, is that my, could you, really, you should be in a bubble. I mean, it's like, what are you doing out, you know?
So as we close out the show, so again, you're the executive chef at the Mill River Club. Yeah. And are you open Christmas Eve?
No, till about 3. Which is unusual because Christmas Eve is a pretty big restaurant night, but clubs are different. You know, half of our clientele is in Florida.
So Christmas Eve closed.
Yeah.
Did they do anything Christmas Day?
No, closed.
Closed. And then they must have some sort of New Year's Eve party.
They do. Last year was canceled due to lack of interest. They didn't have enough people. So it's, yeah, the club thing's a little different than, and I think New Year's Eve's a little different than it used to be. It used to be a big party night. I remember everybody was out, you know, howling at the moon till all hours of the night, and they would have breakfast at 2 in the morning or whatever. It's not the same anymore. I mean, the drinking thing is has become a little bit frowned upon, and, you know, and the police are out, you know, and people are worried about it, and for good reason. You don't want somebody out there whacked, you know, driving around killing people, obviously. But I think it's, you know, I think more people are staying close to home, you know.
You know, yeah, I think people are behaving
parties.
A little bit.
Yeah,
I mean, there's nothing worse than getting romantic with your other half after she's barfed up.
Geez, Stu, I didn't know we were going to go there. Let me think about that for a minute. Are you hanging out with a puker? Is
no,
what you're telling me?
Not at all. Not at all.
Yeah, I can't deal with a puker. Just, if you're going to drink, you better be good at it, you know. And if you're not practiced, start slow.
Yeah.
Get better at it.
Be a pro.
Amen. Amen. I'm a scratch drinker. I think we should have handicaps like golfers, you know what I mean? You don't want to be a 22 drinker, you know. I want to be a plus one, you know. Anyway, that's about it for today, so we got to close the show out. You know, we're going to do that with Tom's Three Keys to Life like we normally do. Life is too short to drink bad wine. Treat every meal like it was your last, and keep chocolate in your life as important as sex and pizza. God willing, we'll see you next week.
Happy birthday, Mom.
Happy birthday, Mom.
Come on now, everybody. Get ready for a treat. It's time for stepping out for something mighty good to eat. You looking for atmosphere? Well, they got it happening here. They're doing barbecue the way it ought to be. Bring your sister, brother, significant other. Bring all your pals. There's always something smoking at Smoking Al's.
Ribtober keeps on smoking. Mention Playing with Fire and enjoy Al's famous baby back rib dinner any Monday through Friday until 7 p.m. for just $14.99. That's right, a baby back dinner for just $14.99. Dinner includes a choice of a half rack baby backs or Al's famous barbecue pulled pork or chicken, a side, and cornbread, all for just $14.99. 22 years and still Long Island's favorite barbecue. Smoking Al's, Massapequa Park. For details, call 516-799-4900. And remember, there's always something smoking at Smoking Al's.
There's always something smoking at Smoking Al's.
Proud sponsor of Playing with Fire. Sundays at 9 a.m. on the new 104.7 WHLI.